Welcome to Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito from Private Vista. In this podcast, we draw from years of experience as well as guest specialists to help you create the life you imagine. Join us in this journey as we enlighten and empower you to align your lifestyle to help you achieve your goals with a clear picture of your future. Now, let's get to the show.
And welcome to the Dollars and Cents podcast with your host, Nicole Romito. Nicole, very good to see you again. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fabulous. As always, good to be with you, Bill. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks. I'm intrigued because this is another one of your series of interviews that you do occasionally where you talk to a colleague of yours.
Yes.
And I don't know why, but I especially enjoy those conversations. So what's up today?
I think you do enjoy them so much because I work with all fabulous people.
You do. That's true.
It is true. And everyone is very interesting about what they do outside of the office. So today I'm welcoming in one of my newest colleagues, Michael M. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course.
As our longtime listeners know, every now and then I will have colleagues on and want to kind of talk about what you do outside of the office. If we have any new listeners, the reason we're doing this is just to give some color and background about why we help clients move towards their private vista. And that's different and unique for each client. And it's really fun for us to discover and learn what our clients want to do, why they're working so hard, and what they want to do once they don't have to work for pay. Michael and I are still here working for pay, but we do have time to do things outside of Private Vista. So before we get into talking about how Michael likes to spend his time outside of work, let me give you a brief bio on him. He graduated from the University of Michigan in 2018. He started his career as a strategy consultant for Fortune 500 clients. While he was in this role, he helped create long-term growth strategy plans, poured through tons of data to find pockets of growth that is left for those companies, and created new departments for his clients so they could continue the discipline to maintain above-market growth. After 3 years in his consulting role, he decided to switch to operations management and join McMaster Carr, where he led various departments as they navigated through the COVID-19 pandemic and the ensuing supply chain crises that followed. We are excited that he recently joined our team at Private Vista, and while he says he hopes to be a helpful resource, we have already seen that he has hit the ground running and is a valuable resource. He has joined as our strategy manager and really is helping us figure out ways to become more efficient and also to allow those of us who are frontline advisors with our clients get back some more time so we can focus even more so on our clients to be able to help them achieve their goals. So welcome, Michael. I know you've been here a couple of months now, but also to the podcast.
Yeah, I know, 4 months already.
I know, time flies when you're having fun. Yes. Well, it's interesting. I do think that your, you know, talents and hobbies that we're going to talk about outside of work, I think really lend to your success in the professional world. So I know I've been teasing this for our listeners, but what Michael likes to do, and I love it because, I love when we have creative people in our field. He was a business major, in school, but he's also been a longtime participant on the performance art side. So I know we're going to touch on really kind of all things performance art, you know, acting, improv, singing. I think maybe the only thing that isn't in there is dancing.
No, I'm absolutely terrible at dancing. I can't. I'm really bad at that. So that is not one of my hobbies.
That's not going to be one of the things you're exploring. All right. Good to know. Well, as we were talking about how did you get into this, it really sounds like it started with kind of when you were a kid and basically A lot of your family has this, these skills or this interest as well. So do you want to kind of start off sharing your family's interest in activities around this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up with a very, I mean, I was a teenage boy, and most teenage boys in America think performance arts is not for them. They automatically assume like this sucks. Like
not very masculine.
Not very masculine. I definitely fell into that category for sure. But my mom, when she grew up in Korea, she was big in all these like Shakespeare theater productions, and she did all these, you know, both singing and acting on theater, and she really loved it, and she, you know, would talk about it a lot. And then
that's amazing.
Yeah. So, and then at the same time, my sister would do all these like kind of singing competitions or like performances for her middle school and high school, and you know, she was my older sister, so growing up I like saw, you know, her do that. So I was definitely exposed to it. And I know it was something that people close to me like doing, which I guess incepted the idea into me as someone in college and like unburdened by the shackles of your public image of your small high school. And now you're in Michigan with tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, it's like a few more people around you.
Yeah, exactly. You can kind of hide in the crowd and be a truer version of yourself, which I actually really like, you know, big college environments for that. I think it's very helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I was like, I'll just do it. I think like Michigan's great for a lot of reasons. I mean, I don't want to alienate the non-Big Ten, non-Michigan Big Ten fans.
Well, and also remember, podcast. I'm from Ohio, so.
Yeah. Don't worry, I won't talk about how great Michigan is for like hours, and I'll actually stay
on
topic.
Oh, look at the time. We're up with our time for the episode here. Thanks for joining us.
I think we learned enough. Oh, right. No, but
so,
one thing.
Yeah, so you're at Michigan. You felt more comfortable to explore it because there were a lot more people there, a lot of people you didn't know and hadn't grown up with. What was your first foray? Like, what did you try out first there?
It was improv.
I love improv. I did improv classes too. but we're here to talk about you. So you go on.
it was like a small, I think it was called the Aughts. And I liked them specifically because I knew they did not do performances. It was just 15 people in a room doing improv. And you could definitely tell like half of them were really good at it and were either doing performances or could do a performance at any moment in front of hundreds of people. And then the other half that I was part of was just like people who wanted to try it. So I did that because I thought it would be fun and I thought it would be funny, and it was all those things. But then I also like actually noticed, you know, I was starting to get into a point in my life where I was interviewing for a lot of internships or just had to like,
sure,
you know, force myself into an uncomfortable situation with like 100 people in some conference room, you know, trying to network with someone. And there is something about, on Tuesday night, I made an absolute fool of myself in front of 20 strangers doing ridiculous things,
right,
and saying ridiculous things. All of a sudden you go into a situation that feels high stakes and suddenly it just doesn't. You're just like, oh, I can just be normal because I've been a lot weirder in front of others before and nothing happened. In fact, people laughed and it was a positive environment. So it actually was very helpful and kind of got me a little bit into the, not just improv, but like performance arts in general. I was like, so that was kind of the gateway drug into that.
I love that. Yeah, I think improv is so fun. It's hard.
It's real hard.
It's really hard because I think our listeners know that we're based out of Chicago. So I took a couple of the improv classes through Second City. And it was a lot harder than I thought. I enjoyed it, but what are some of the skills? I'll share. I know one that always stuck with me is like the yes and concept. And I think that serves me well, even in the professional world, right? Because the whole idea is, if you say something, it's not that I'm going to either just say no or not support you in it or redirect, but it's more like yes and. So maybe I want to go a different direction or I have a different idea, but you acknowledge what your co-performer put out there and then either help them build it or weave in your ideas. So I love the concept of you don't leave anyone hanging.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be completely honest. Like, I've seen both in that club and outside that club. Like, I've seen improv that was both really good and like really terrible. Like, you know, you couldn't even like look at it, like kind of like cringe embarrassment.
You're like, I can't unsee that.
Oh. Yeah. And which obviously, you know, is why it's hard for a lot of people, because they don't want to put themselves in that kind of situation. But I've always noticed that the people who are good at it, to your point, are people who are like really good at listening and don't have preconceived notions of what they are going to do when they walk up there.
Oh, that's like a really good point to highlight.
Yeah, because it's so painful when this person comes up and they think they have the funniest thing to say, but it's totally not related to what anyone just did. And you just look like a fool. And
right?
You know,
like what alien just got dropped into our skit here or our improv performance, right?
Yeah. Versus other people who are like just actively soaking in the information that the other actors are giving them, which, you know, this isn't just an improv thing. It's like perform theater, dramatic, comedic, any acting on camera, like people who do not soak in the information being given to them by other actors are usually the ones you can tell are bad actors.
And then that translates into, I would say, real life, whether it's professional or personal. You can tell when someone's listening either to understand or learn versus, okay, when is Michael going to stop talking so I can respond, or, you know, either say what I want to say or give him the right answer, right? So,
yeah. And like 99% of people, the monologues they have in their head are really not as interesting as I think they are.
Like, I'm glad I'm in the other 1%.
Yeah, you're on all the partners at Private Vista are in the 1%.
That's what I thought. But we always like to hear it.
Yeah.
So you did improv. And then I also know when we were talking about this that your family did a lot of karaoke as well.
Yes. Yes. That was we had a really old ratchet karaoke machine. It was like from like 1993. I think it was cool at the time because it had the Lion King soundtrack before Lion King came out, which was like actually kind of nuts to imagine you would have that in 93.
Exactly. Right. I'm like, look at you guys, forerunners.
Yeah. But, you know, it was really old, but it was fun. I'm Korean American, and I think it's a well-known fact that like Koreans like just love going doing karaoke.
Yes.
And you know, it's just like a fun way to pass time and like drink and, you know, hang out with people, and you know, we definitely fell into that camp too.
I love that. So how did your karaoke launch you into another I know you, like we said, you have done a few different things in performance arts. So singing is one of your interests. So I'm assuming that grew out of your family, your fond memories of your family doing karaoke. I believe you also join the choir at Michigan, right?
Yes, it was a low stakes like choir. This was, frankly, you know, we did have performances. We had a performance every semester, so I partook in like 5 or 6 performances in college.
And how many people would you be performing in front of?
Several hundred, like 500. Wow. And our choir
That's
was
amazing.
Like, you know, 60, 70 people around there. So,
okay.
You know, it was honestly a lot scarier because I could, like, I played piano, but I would not say I'm like, frankly, if you put a musical sheet in front of me, I can't like think of the notes it's actually saying. I can't like hear them that well, but like, I knew I liked singing and I wanted to try it in some fashion outside of just karaoke or, you know, singing in the shower. Yeah, oh, exactly.
Great minds.
Yeah. So, you know, that was, I wanted to try it, and it was actually really nice because I was part of a, you know, that was one of the greatest team experiences ever. And also too, like a lot of people who don't sing or are afraid of singing, they immediately chalk it up as like, it's either a skill that you have or haven't. Like, you know, Lady Gaga was born with the voice that she had, and yeah, she's talented and so is everyone else. But like, it'll, like 90% of it is practice. You don't just get good. You're not just like born good at
born it. Born like a natural singer.
Okay. Yeah. And so the feeling of slowly getting better at something that originally I felt was so something you're just born into this level of quality or not. And then also like making friends and being in this like really good team environment where
right.
you're constantly getting direction from the composer and you're constantly hearing the other voices in your group and in, you know, in your section. And, you know, the first like 50 to 75% of practices, you walk out of there and you're like, all of these songs sound terrible. Like if we were to perform right now, we would, it would be horrible. And
oh,
then
no.
There's something
well, that's why
around,
there's so many practices.
Yeah, right. And then there's something about the last like two practices where you suddenly got it to click and it feels so good. It's so satisfying. I don't know why it happens like this, but it's always like the last two or three practices where everything
where it just
starts
all
clicking.
Comes together.
Yeah. But then the first 90%, you know, you're just scrambling and, you know, no one seems to be singing the same note and all that stuff. So,
oh my gosh. I could never be in the choir, even as a child for the choir class or whatever. I always had to do the triangle. They were like, no words for you. Just do the triangle at the end. And people who know me well know I do enjoy singing. As you know, I'm very loud, but I never know the right words, but I sing with conviction. So my friends are always like, wait, what did you just think they said? And I'm like, oh, no, those are the words. They're like, I'm pretty sure they're not. So,
yeah.
So I admire you for that.
Yeah. I mean, now I don't sing as much, but it's one of those things that's hard. Like in college, it's so easy to find all these groups. And
true.
In
that's
adulthood,
true.
It's exponentially harder, which I'm glad I did it in college, because if I were to have gained interest now as an adult, you know, everyone has jobs, kids,
yes.
you know, et cetera. Like
a million just, demands on their time.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to find 100 people your age who are free from 6 to 9 p.m. like 3 days a week. Like
yeah,
that's going to be hard.
And then that's a great, I guess, lead in to like your third prong of your performance arts interest, right? And so I think as an adult, though, one of the things you were able to find some time for is acting.
Yes.
And you still, I think you're still doing that today, right? I mean, I know
yes.
you don't do it every day, but.
No, but it is, it's, I do it for the love of the game. I don't do it for like money or for the intent of like being in a certain play or not.
Okay.
But, you know, there are classes I've taken here at Acting Studio Chicago, which I highly recommend to anyone who wants to do it. I think they're my favorite so far. And I also did acting classes too at Second City. So not the improv classes. I was actually doing like scripts and dramatic acting and stuff like that. And, you know, to be frank, this was probably the thing that scared me the most, but I wanted to do the most because for my whole childhood, like I grew up watching all these shows and movies and like loving the acting in it. And I've always noticed like how much I pay attention to like good writing and good acting and like all the little like nuances of like things like that. And then, you know, and moved to Chicago, I see more plays and then I like start appreciating yes. the difference in play acting versus on camera acting, which is like, you know, they're both acting, but they might as well be two different fields entirely.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I wanted to do this. I also liked reading scripts and there's, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, you think of improv and people are excited by the fact that you can say anything, that there is no script kind of thing. But like when you do regular, you know, dramatic acting or you're reading a script, even though the words are the same every time you read them, there's a well-written script has so much emotional depth, even to side characters, that you can read it 50 times and not understand it, and then it clicks. And then something I've also really liked about that too is that I would often read a script or a character that I had to play, and I would think about different people in my life or even myself at a specific part of my life that would probably be the most similar to what the character is going through. And it's therapeutic in a way, and it builds your EQ in a really solid way. And, you know, you're playing this and you're like inhabiting how you feel other people feel at this time. And you get good direction from your teachers and the directors, who then add more elements to it. And, you know, it's just a really great way of building empathy and becoming a better listener, and being more attentive to people's emotions. I've honestly felt like I'm a better conversationalist now than I, you know, noticeably than before I took these acting classes.
Oh, interesting. And is there any, like, one, I think you mentioned it's mainly due to putting yourself in the other person's shoes, or in the character's shoes in that case. Yeah. And then I would think so too, especially maybe when you're having more difficult conversations, like to be able to understand like why they're upset or they're sad or they're frustrated. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, most scenes are meant to be like either an exaggeration or like the most intense moments of people's lives too. So it's kind of nice, you know, where you just, You're not often yelling at someone in real life, or like you're not often like having the most important conversation you've ever had with this person in your life. You know, they only happen like so many times. So it's sure. Actually kind of fun to play act things like that, where you're having like a super heated argument, or, you know, you're I don't know, like falling in love with some person or anything like that. Like, they're fun situations to play with, and especially if you have like a really good co-actors, which I often did, it's just a lot of fun.
That's amazing. And did you do, I think you mentioned you comedies, dramas, things like that. Do you have a preference, or do you like a little bit of both?
I like the ones where it's like the dramas that have comedic elements to it, or frankly, which in a way, This happens so often, I don't know why, but I feel like I would get a drama script, or I would interpret it as like, this is a pure drama, like it's pretty dark, the situation is pretty dire for the characters.
Okay.
And then like me and my co-actor would act it out, and like the class would start laughing, and it was so, and not because like we were doing a horrible job or something.
No, right.
There was something funny about it that the crowd felt was funny. And I was just like, I'm about to, like, I don't know, like do this crazy fictional drug deal or something like
right.
that. Like, how is that funny? But then people would find it funny because you know, if the character's nervous, they might do some nervous tick that like people find relatable. And like a lot of people like laugh when they see something like that. And
true,
it's weird. But yeah, I mean, I do like dramas, but they're often are received comedically sometimes.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe you're just not that serious of a guy.
I know. I guess. Yeah. I just. No.
With no all one your gets spreadsheets me. And analysis, we're learning about the real Michael. There's a little bit of a comedian behind all his pivot tables and whatnot.
I know. Yeah. I think it's also nice too, from a very surface level. Like, a lot of my job is like doing these like numbers and numerical analyses.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you know this, Nicole, like I feel like a lot of the processes that I've worked on, while they are rooted in some kind of formula or math or numbers, they would not work at all if I was not transparently communicating them or empathizing with the situations of the advisors that I'm changing their situations on. Like, you know, you have to have that empathic element.
Right.
Otherwise, like if it's just a cold cut analysis, like I'm going to ruin the business in some way, shape or form. If like if it's so quantitative and just lacking a human element like that.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to receive when it's when it's just all about the data or the quantitative analysis, it sometimes at some point you're just like, I can't absorb anymore, or how does this really apply to me, right? Things like that.
Yeah, and I often feel that a lot of quantitative people like think that their value starts and ends with that.
Right.
I think it's a classic, like, oh, what's better, book smart or street smart? And I'm like, I honestly think you'd be super valuable to the workforce if you were barely above average on both, because I don't think people realize how rare that is. I've dealt with so many people who would just like freak out about some operational metric and not realize all the context and all the realities that exist behind that. And it's like, oh, no, but we want to make this 10% higher or 10% lower. And it's just like, OK, well, like, do you understand how that number got there and all the humans that caused it to get there and what happens when you're asking it to go up and all the costs and changes and things like that? Like, it's not just, you know, I can just plus two, minus two from things. Yeah, like right. That.
Exactly. Well, awesome. So our time flew by, as I think we both kind of figured it would. I think I want to say thank you for kind of sharing a little bit about what you enjoy outside of work, and certainly gives me good insight. And I think it's always interesting for our listeners to know that I would say us finance people aren't just these boring, you know, people having our little spreadsheet design contests over here. We can be creative and fun too. So, well, good. Well, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Before we wrap up, I think, you know, I ask all my guests, if you could live anywhere in the world, no time constraints, financial constraints, you know, nothing. It was your dealer's choice. Where would you like to live? Where would you most want to live, and why?
I feel like I need to decide this later in life, but I could either see myself like wanting just a really nice apartment in the middle of a busy city like Chicago. Like, honestly, if I lived in Chicago the rest of my life, I'd be pretty happy.
Oh, I love that.
But I would also like have another idea of just this big ranch with a ton of animals.
Oh, wow.
Very different life, but I like both. So I need to decide on that.
That is fun. Would you be farming the animals, or more refuge?
They're purely there. They are purely there for my own entertainment. Like,
oh, I
would just
that.
Have a ton of dogs and, you know, maybe a couple horses for transportation.
And a monkey. You have to have a monkey.
Yeah.
That's what I've
birds
decided.
And stuff like that. So.
Oh, perfect. Well, Sue Bolt can come over and help you with your bird escape. So.
Yeah, Sue Bolt, I need her to
you need her on the
manage.
Bird side.
Yeah.
You'll have a nice collection of owls.
Yeah.
So. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you taking time from your busy schedule.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
No, no, that was a very interesting conversation. I enjoyed it very much as well. And two things, Michael. First of all, you get to change your mind if you come back on. And you can live anywhere else you want to live.
Yeah,
okay,
it's just a point in time.
Yeah, like, it's not just a point in time. It's just a point in time.
You sign in blood.
And the other thing I think that's really, really important that everybody can walk away from on this is don't be afraid to expand not your horizons, but your experiences. Because your experiences inform who you are today, and they have an impact on you. You know, it's terrific. Full confession, a long time ago, I was a professional actor, decades ago, right? And I grew up singing in choirs. Nobody wants to hear me sing, not in a choir.
Because we'll have choirs to do a duet, Bill.
No. But, you know, choir's the ultimate team. Choirs are the ultimate team. To your point, Michael, and I think that this is something everybody should take away from it, is if you can't really sing, there's nothing as beautiful as a bunch of people who can't really sing singing together, because it somehow becomes magically wonderful to listen to, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you cover each other's weaknesses, really.
You do. You absolutely do. We're not all Beyonce. We're not all Lady Gaga. No, most of us are just us. So thank you for sharing that with us. Really, really appreciate hearing from you and you opening up about it. And Nicole, I knew I was going to like this. So if people are listening to this podcast and are thinking, these are people I might want to be involved with, what's a good way for them, if they don't already have a relationship with you, to maybe have an initial conversation to see if they want to have one that's better than just listening to the podcast?
Oh, absolutely. There's two ways they can reach out. They can go to our website, which is myprivatevista.com. On the homepage, there's a contact us button. So you can just easily complete your information. You can reference this episode, or if there's a different episode that kind of caught your attention, and then we'll get you connected with one of our fabulous advisors. Or if you prefer to call, you can do so at 312-831-4370, and Lorena will be able to connect you with one of our great advisors as well.
That's fantastic. And I would encourage you to do that, listeners. If you don't have a relationship, do reach out. Clearly, these are interesting people. The other thing I would encourage you to do is hit the follow button, because when you hit the follow button, you're automatically notified when a new episode of this podcast becomes available, and you can give that one a listen as well. The other thing I would ask is, if you like the podcast, tell people about it, share it with people. Word of mouth promotion is a beautiful, wonderful thing, and we'd very much appreciate it. So until next time, I'm Bill Tucker. On behalf of Nicole, Michael, and everybody at My Private Vista, thank you for taking the time to listen, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito, sponsored by Private Vista. Visit our website at www.myprivatevista.com or give us a call at 312-831-4370. And don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Private Vista is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is neither indicative nor a guarantee of future results. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data or other information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analyses, prices, or other data or information contained in this presentation is provided as general market commentary and does not constitute investment advice. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions or results obtained from the use of this information. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC assume no liability for action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to this information. The information is provided as of the date referenced. Such data and other information are subject to changes without notice. This was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC or any of its affiliates.